Motherhood. It starts from the moment of conception. Infertility, miscarriage, pregnancy, birth, postpartum, mommy life. Let's unzip it all. I want to let you know you aren't alone. Revealing monthly mommy matters. Every month, IG Live conversations with moms.
There she is.
Hello.
Hey, girl. Hey, hey, hey.
I'm trying to figure out how to.
I know what happens is Instagram, when you go live, it also cuts. But I can see you. How you doing, boo?
I'm excited that I get to see you, seeing as I'm not beside you anymore.
I know. So those who don't know, I'm trying to get wave at everybody coming in at the same time. So if I miss you guys, I'm sorry. But those who don't know, Sam was my neighbor.
I'm sorry.
Was it last week? Last week you moved. Last week.
Yeah.
Yeah, guys, you know, last week. And she was here today and I miss seeing her. But my lovely, lovely neighbor, she wasn't even just a neighbor. She is family. She is family to us and we love her. And I thought it was perfect to have Sam on, talk a little bit about her story, obviously, because she's a mom. But I'm not going to do too much introducing. I'm gonna get her to introduce herself. So Sam, since they know who your name, who are you? What do you do?
All right. So I own my own residential commercial cleaning business. I am a mom of three boys and we are a blended family. And I pretty much work every day of my life and that's all I represent at this time. There's no days off. Yeah.
Busy woman, y'all. Busy woman. But let's kind of just get into it. So as you guys know, we're kind of going to be talking about, you know, what she went through in childhood, how that impacted her motherhood journey, and now being the mother of a blended family, which I think is amazing. But I don't want to talk too much. So Sam, tell us a little bit about your childhood, like what happened and how that kind of impacted your thoughts into motherhood.
Okay, if I can try and say long story in a short version for now, as we've talked about, we can have a part two.
We will have a part two, guys. Let me just say, there's a lot to talk about. We will have a part two, more details. So she's going to give you a synopsis.
I would love that because I think it will help people who struggle with the same experiences I experienced and to kind of give them a little light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes.
Because I, for a long time, didn't think there was one. And if anything, it kind of gave me more fuel to keep persevering and push to be the person I am today. Mm-hmm. But with that said, yes, my mom was 17 when she was pregnant, 18 when she had me. So I instantly had grown up with a single mom who was also a teenager, which meant she was kind of absent through most of my life. I was put through grandparents or friends of friends and stuff like that for a long time. And it was kind of just being an only child for about 10 years. So it was a little lonely for a long time. And my sister Allie, who actually lives with me now, she was born when I was 10. So then I was not an only child, but I mean, I went 10 years as being an only child. So I was kind of upset when I found out that she was born. I was told that I hid under the hospital bed and wanted nothing to do with her.
Oh,
yeah. But I made up for it because now I'm like her mom. So it's okay. But yeah, so just kind of growing up, no father, in and out of different men, kind of in and out of the home. And my mom was kind of, like I said, not really there. So it was me being pretty independent from the beginning and learning that if I wanted anything to be done or if I needed anything, comfort, anything, it was kind of on me to do that for myself, which then grew me into being quite the independent human being that I am today. Which has pushed people away. Also, I've been in relationships where I've been told, you're too independent. You don't need me.
And let me tell you, Adrian is on here. He will tell you the same thing. When we started dating, I was very independent. Like, I remember being on a date, and he's like, he's, you know, man mentality where it's like, I pay for everything, I'm responsible for this, I'm like, that's him, he's a manly man. And I'm like, no, I will pay for the bill, or we're splitting it. There is none of, you know, there's none of this. So, yeah. And for a very long time, even, I think, even after, babe, you can confirm with me, I think even after we got married, it was still a little struggle. And it was like, no, your money is my money. there is no power struggle. So I completely understand when it comes to growing up and being extremely independent and then going into relationships where men are like, no.
Yeah, there is some in most, not all most families, but there is a big stigma on like the men, you know, take care of this and that. And I never liked that, because sometimes it turns into a power struggle too, yeah. where like they kind of feel they have more sway. I mean, I've always been like, nope, I'll live on my own. I'll pay my own things. I'll do my own thing. And I've been on my own. I haven't said that yet, but so there was a lot of complications growing up. My mom was an alcoholic, is still currently an alcoholic. And I decided that I couldn't take the abuse from boyfriends. There was a lot of abuse on the end of sexual abuse that I struggled with when I was a child from strange men in my home. And then also just the mental and emotional abuse that I would get on a daily basis from my mom, because she was always, unfortunately, intoxicated. Yeah. So then when I was 10 and she had my sister, I then kind of took on the role of being the mom while my mom was absent, which then made me grow up very quickly.
Yes.
So I lost a lot of my childhood, very much so. I still feel there's lots of things that I couldn't even do at this time. I mean, I did go through a little bit of a spurt, which I can go into later. But essentially, yeah, I kind of grew up really quickly having to take care of my sister. And then I couldn't take the abuse any longer from my mom, to a point where I didn't end up leaving the home when I was 15 and wow. lived on my own. And I lived downtown Hamilton, trying to work night shifts at Tim Hortons and then finish high school, because I didn't want to be someone who couldn't graduate, because that was another thing in my family, which no one graduated, no one went to college, no one went to university. It was kind of just known that you had a child at a young age, you became a drug addict or an alcoholic, and then you kind of tainted your children into being the same pattern. And I don't know what in me happened, but I just saw it consistently happen in my life where I was like, nope, this is not happening. I am not allowing myself to continue the pattern in this family. I have to figure out how to break it. And so I just, working is the one thing that was embedded in me, and I don't know how, but I just worked my butt off. Like I said, night shifts, barely slept, went and took 3 buses to get to high school to finish my diploma, to then have 3 buses home in an area where I was terrified on a daily basis. I lived on a house along an alley. People followed me all the time. Random people tried to get me in their cars, because I lived in Hamilton where people would actually be strippers or hookers, whatever was going on. So it was very scary, but I managed to get myself through. And I think about it today, thinking if I ever had a daughter that went through what I went through downtown, I would feel like vomiting on a daily basis. Like it was pretty sick, the things that I experienced, but I'm so grateful that I'm still here and that nothing extreme happened to me living down there.
And the good thing is, like, I know you were saying that you're not sure where the whole like working your butt off came from, but I can say it's because everybody goes through experiences and everybody deals with it differently, but your experience, the impact that it had on you was to say, I don't want to be like this. I don't want to follow it. So I'm going to do everything I can to make sure I don't do it. Where there's other people that may experience things and goes, you know, it's already happening to me, I might as well just do the same things and get involved with the same things that's been happening to me. So it's like your perspective on your circumstance is what caused you to be the hardworking person, even just owning a business, like you said, you own a business and you work hard. And now kind of going through the trauma of, you know, pushing yourself through school, working, living where you did, to now saying you have three boys. First, you were a single mom first. So how did you become a single mom?
It sounds really silly, but initially it started I had a relationship with someone less than a year, and it was fun. It was just like, you're how old was I? I was 20, well, turning 20, and then I ended up, yeah. So I was turning 20. So you're in your 20s, you're having fun, you're relaxed, mm-hmm. or whatever, you do whatever you want. I ended up getting very quickly pregnant within less than a year of being with the person. Uh-huh. And unfortunately, but fortunately, because I love my son and I wouldn't want it any other way. Yeah. But it was kind of, it was planned in the sense that all the people around me, I had a lot of friends who were young parents. And I was like, I want to be a young parent. Like, I'm lonely. I don't have family. I want a family. So how do I get a family? If I don't have a mom, I don't have a dad. And at that time, my sister was very young and still with my mom, unfortunately. And I just felt really lonely. And I selfishly was like, hey, do you want to have a baby? Because I want to have a baby and I want to have a family because I've never had a family. And it was just very impulsive. Both of us were young. Mm-hmm. And he was like, yeah, like, let's have a baby. Everyone's having babies. And so we did. We had a son very quickly. As soon as we said it, we kind of got pregnant very quick. And so he didn't have a job. And he was like, I got to get a job, like, right now. So he manned up and he got a job and he did well. We lived with his mom and she helped us get through everything. Mm-hmm. And he is very old school and I don't have anything against it. I think it's sweet. You know, you're going to have a baby together. You want to try and build this, even though maybe we didn't know each other that well and we're starting to clash and we realized maybe this was a bad idea. Yeah. He was thinking in the best way he could is maybe we get married. Maybe we just do this. We work hard and we get through it, even though it's maybe we aren't compatible. Well, we selfishly had, we made the decision to have a baby. Like, let's just do this. So there was a checklist. We followed everything. I mean, hey, we're getting pregnant. Okay, let's get engaged. So my son's first birthday also laid on Mother's Day, and he made a very beautiful party. There was lots of people there. And I'm 21. I mean, I knew that we had this child together and it was very overwhelming. And I don't know what happened in all of my mind at the time.
You're young. Maybe,
it was the high, you know, the high of I have a baby and with this man and now he's here proposing to me on my first son's first birthday, Mother's Day. Like, this is meant to be. Like, I have to say yes. There's people with cameras. Like, well, we got to do this, right?
Yeah.
Kind of like, I was just so young. And so I said yes. So much difficulty in the relationship. We were more friends than we were in a relationship. We were great co-parenters, but there was never much of a spark. And I do blame myself for some of this because I developed really high separation anxiety from Holden when I gave birth to him. So, which is my first son. I do believe that some of it came from the trauma of feeling so alone all the time as a child. I felt like there was a lot of a child abandonment. It was me being left with strange people I didn't know for days. I used to have a babysitter that locked me into a bedroom for a minimum of 8 hours. And I tried to tell my mom and she didn't believe me. It took at least, I mean, I was a child. It's hard to say time, but it would be within a year that she finally found out. She caught the woman wasn't home. She left me with her daughter who was underage and I was locked in the bedroom. Uh-oh. And my mom was like, what's going on? Like, why is she in this room? And there was a big deal about it. I don't know the extent of it because I was quite young. I just remember being locked in a room and crying and punching the door and saying, like, I want to get out. Like, please let me out. I'm awake. I'm not sleeping anymore. Like, let me out, please. And that fear stuck with me and developed a lot of anxiety of feeling alone and feeling scared. My mom would leave me with other people where as I got older, she would leave me with people who had kids and they would all go party. And then I would be stuck with like seven children from all these adults. They'd leave me with all these kids because I was the oldest one and I'd have to take care of all these people. And there was babies and toddlers and I was scared and I would cry and I would have to wait till the next day before I'd see my mom. I've had moments where my mom left me with my sister and she wouldn't come home until the next day, but later. So I would have to wake up, get my sister ready for kindergarten, make her lunch, bring her to school, be late for school when I was in high school to then get told by the teacher that I'm calling your mom, you were late, you skipped first class. And I didn't want to tell them, oh, well, I missed first period because my mom was drunk and didn't come home. I had to bring my sister to school, because then I would be pulled in and out of school to talk to Children's Aid, because people would call on us because they did kind of have a feeling something was wrong, which then led me to lying to them and saying everything's fine, because then my mom would say, well, if you tell Children's Aid the truth, they're going to take you and your sister away from me, and they're going to separate you. They're going to put you in different families and you'll never see me again. And I was like, well, I can't have that. Like, I love my sister too much. Like, I love my mom.
That's the thing. You're forced. You were forced from a young age to mother other children, not just your sister. Like, you saying that you were the oldest and you had to take care of these kids. So you're forced into a mothering role from such a young age, and feeling neglected from your own mom, to now, you know, getting proposed to, you know, you have your family, but yet you're still feeling alone. And that's a thing that a lot of people don't realize, that sometimes you may have people physically around, but that doesn't mean that you can't still feel lonely. Like, you can still have your son and that's around you, but you can still feel lonely. You can still have this guy that, you know, you have a child with, but you can still feel lonely, which is causing you, like you said, you have that separation anxiety. So that it definitely impacts your motherhood and your relationships.
Because
it's from a relationship from your own mother, right?
It was definitely difficult, because that's where I tied all of that. And there's so much more, but like we said, we'll talk about
definitely
in another video. But all of that tied in very quickly to how I am today. And it took me some time to process it. But then as soon as I had Holden, I was like, well, I can't leave him. I can't. Yeah. People would be like, oh, you know, you want to come to the store? No, I don't want to go to the store. Oh, well, you know, Cody even tried. He's like, how about you go to the store and grab milk? Like, just 10 minutes away from Holden. I was like, no, I can't. I can't leave him. And then it turned into us fighting a lot, because I needed him. And when he got hurt, I needed him to come to me, and I needed him to do this with me, and I had to be with him all the time. And it got to a point where, like, I didn't even really want him to hold him, but I did. But there was moments where, like, even if he held him, I'm like, okay, he's crying, he needs me. Like, I'm breastfeeding. Like, he needs to be with me. And I believe that that strongly impacted our relationship too at such a young age for him. Like, he's excited. It's his first son. He wants to bond with him, but I needed him. It wasn't just like I wanted him. I needed him. And a lot of that stemmed out to some deep, not dealt with childhood trauma of being a child who was abandoned most of her life. And I overcompensated by overloving my child, because I didn't want him to feel alone or unloved by his mother, which is something I dealt with on a daily basis.
And so you have two sons now. So what happened with dealing with the separation anxiety for your first son, and then introducing a new baby into your relationship, into your family? What happens? Like, how did you deal with the separation anxiety and then being a mom of two?
Well, there was that checklist that I was talking about that I didn't know, but if you think about it, it was kind of a checklist of like what you do to be the perfect family, which is, okay, we met, we got pregnant. What do we do next? We get engaged. What do we do next? We either get married or we buy a house. We chose to buy a house. Well, after buying a house, what do we do next? Well, let's have another child, because then we'll have two close in age and they'll love each other and they'll be, you know, siblings, and that'll be so great. And then we'll get a dog, and then we'll buy cars. And, you know, we just like checked off every single thing that you would do in our eyes at that time.
Yeah.
That seemed like the right thing to do.
You're young. You see all these things around you. You see TV. So you're saying this is how it's supposed to go, especially because I didn't grow up with it. I got to make sure I have it. Right. So you're going through the process of doing everything you believe that you should do to make sure that your life is on point, not realizing that I got to make sure I'm doing this with the right person. I got to make sure that I'm doing it for somebody. Yes. You know, I have this partner that loves their children. I love my children, but are we meant to be together? Right.
Yeah. And that was the problem, is I don't think we were ever meant to be together, but in a sense we were, because like we had things in our life that weren't well, and to be together there, we fixed them. I mean, he had his issues, I had my issues, and together we did help each other through those things, but it never felt romantic. To me, it was just very like, it was a very good friendship that we did very well with the kids, but then anything in a romantic way, anything where you have that spark, maybe, and I can't speak for him. Mm-hmm. He could have felt it, but I didn't. And I do feel bad because as soon as I had Holden, things changed. I was all about him and I was too young to realize that in order to succeed as parents for kids, you have to succeed as a relationship, because if there's nothing there, then there's, you know, like you can't move forward with this family to keep the children healthy and teaching them what love and relationships are. And
important for them to see that, because
they
know.
It was all about him. I like Cody was pushed away. I'm like, kind of, hey, I have a baby now. And I just pushed him away. And yeah. I realize that now, being almost 10 years later and maturing a lot in relationships, is that I didn't even give it a chance. It was, no, this baby is what matter to me. And that's it. And that could also be, I grew up with a single mom. There was no man in the picture.
Yeah.
So who's to know that there isn't some underlining issues in me that I haven't dealt with, where I was just like, yeah, but I don't need you now. Like, I have my child and I'm good now. And I do sometimes wonder if there was me pushing everyone away for that matter. I mean, he had family members that even said, like, you're obsessed with your child. You need to let other people see him. Mm-hmm. Because he would get hurt and it would get to a point where nobody could soothe him but me. And that was me. That was my fault, because I made him feel like I was the only person that could soothe him and make him feel comfortable. And then that's kind of a slap in the face. Like, oh man, like I'm actually, here I am trying to overcompensate to be a better mom, a mom I thought I deserved for him. But now I'm making him feel like I'm the only person he needs. And now he's pushing everyone else away too. His grandparents, his father, he couldn't be soothed by anyone but me. And I felt like, wow, I'm now, my own personal trauma is starting to mess up his growing up, or upbringing, I should say, because of my problems that I haven't dealt with. Because at this time, currently, I have not sought therapy. I believe that I should have had therapy as a child.
Yes, to deal with half of the stuff that you've been, all of the stuff that you've been through. And then going into relationships, because as you can see, romantic relationships and relationship with your child, it's impacted that the opposite way, the opposite way than what you had. But it is something, and we've talked about it before, and even just, I know you listen to some podcasts to also help you kind of get through and help with your mental state and stuff like that. But the good thing is, you were able to recognize, because sometimes 10 years later, people still don't realize the impact of what their childhood trauma has had on them, and how them, in your case, overcompensating for their child has impacted them. But you recognize it, and that's a good thing. And I'm sure, like, even now, that moving into being a mom of two, it's what you did or you saw with one child, you tried not to do with the second child. And you can correct me if I'm wrong. I'm just making assumptions here. But it's also from that too, right?
Yeah, there's a bit of with Ronan, I was more relaxed for sure. So fast forward, I mean, yeah, we had some anxiety with Holden, but then I did end up having to go to college. I decided I needed a career. Like, I have this baby. And that was another thing. I was like, I'm not showing him that I'm just going to sit here, live off maternity leave, and then live off, you know, the government or anything. I was like, no, I need to persevere. I need to be better than my mom. I need to show everyone that I can be somebody. And actually, Cody's sister, April, she suggested, hey, like, you're really good with kids. You should probably try EC. I was like, oh, okay. So I did. I actually, after a year of breastfeeding, I applied to college, and I got into Mohawk College to do early childhood education. Mm-hmm. And I put Holden into infant daycare right after my maternity leave was over.
Yeah.
That alone was very difficult, but you get,
I can imagine.
I cried. He was in the same daycare center as me, but he was in the infant daycare and I was in the toddler and preschool. And I would see him through the field and he would be crying because he could see me and he was so confused. Like, why is my mom there? But I'm over here with these people I don't know. And then I would get off my, go for a break or whatever. And I would hide and cry because I was like, I'm a terrible mom. I left him over there. He's on the other side of the fence. Like, this is terrible. So probably should have put him in a different daycare. We learned that later and I did separate it. But for a long time, it was very difficult. Here I am going to work to take care of other people's children, but leaving my child with someone else while I go take care of other people's kids. And that was hard, but also kind of healthy because it allowed me to learn how to have space from Holden. Mm-hmm. And I think it was harder on me than it was him. I think I made worse reactions for sure. Yeah. But that got me comfortable to a point where I could start going out and see friends for an hour or two. And then I started like actually doing things without him. And that helped Cody bond with Holden. And then fast forward to us buying our first house. We're still engaged. We never got married. And deep down when he was like, hey, you want to buy a house or get married? I felt like I still really wasn't ready for marriage. And that made me realize, well, maybe I said yes because I thought it was the right thing. But yeah. I'm going to revisit that later. Like, let's just buy a house because that's smart. That's the right thing to do. Let's buy a house. So we bought a house and I just thought, hey, like we should probably have another child if we have one. Like, again, like I said, the checklist I thought that you had to do to be this successful, perfect family, which obviously I know is far from perfect. Nobody is
exactly
perfect.
Nobody is perfect. Whether you do it the right way or
the right way is to, in other people's eyes, is to get married first and then buy a house and then have a child. You know, there's so many different versions of what the right way is, but as
for your life, exactly. Yeah.
And as a child who didn't have any proper upbringing, I didn't really know what I was doing. I was just kind of following whatever happened. Not realizing the consequences of everyone around me, being my children the most, who get impacted by every decision I make. But yes, so we did. I got pregnant with Ronan, and I thought I was doing pretty good because Holden started JK, and I was having my first baby. So I thought, this is perfect. He's going to go to kindergarten, and that gives me the daytime to bond with my new baby. But that actually ended up turning into Ronan being my second. They're 4 years apart. Ronan became very territorial over me to a point where if Holden tried to cuddle me, Ronan got mad.
Oh.
And honestly, there's probably a part of me that maybe I did something to make him feel that he was more important than Holden. I don't know what I did to make it. Sometimes kids just act this way, but sometimes I think it could be influential on my part. Maybe I did favoritize him more because he was little and cute and like, oh, poor baby, like, mommy will take care of you, and Holden, mommy loves you, but, like, how about you go hang out with daddy? I feel like there probably was some moments where I should have learned how to compartmentalize the two relationships and be like, hey, you each get equal time.
You know what? Every mom, like, I don't think it's ever going to be perfect because you've never done this before. You've never done this before. He has not been around long enough to understand how this works. So you even trying to say, maybe, you know, you should have spent this time and that time. You did what you knew was best. And sometimes, like, I don't know what's best. I'm just doing.
And there's no manual.
Exactly. I think that's what motherhood is. It's just doing. We look and say, okay, this may be impacting our child. We're not sure how, but let me try this. Does this work? You know, trial and error. It's not working. All right. I have no idea, but let's get this going. Let's get that going. And like you said, it could have just been him because of, you know, him being the only child for 4 years, just like you, probably hiding under the hospital bed when the baby, just being alone for 4 years. And, you know, he was very attached to you in the beginning. Now this new baby's coming or has come and he's too young to understand that, you know, there's a new baby. Mommy needs to give attention to this new baby because baby needs more attention than you right now, but mommy still loves you. And also, like you said, him trying to balance having that relationship with his father, right? So it's hard.
It was actually exciting for Cody. He was like, yay, like I get more one-on-one with Holden, like that's all I've ever wanted. And then when Ronan gets older, I'll have more one-on-one with him later too. So like we kind of literally, it was like, hey, you take Holden, I'll take Ronan. And that was probably a bad idea. Like, we should have learned how to share the time.
Both of them, yeah.
But again, I think I got a little territorial. He's my new baby, and I have to be with him all the time. I was more relaxed with him, excuse me, and I did actually leave more earlier than with Holden. But I still think I put so much focal point on Ro that it made Ro think that he was more important. And it made Holden feel like he should probably hang out with Dad more, because there was a point in our relationship where I didn't like Holden started to ask for Dad more than me, even though he was my first baby and he was all about me. When this all went down, he was just kind of like, no, I want Daddy. No, I want to hang out with Daddy. And then Ronan was all me. And so at first it made me sad, but then I had this new baby who was all about me. So it distracted me from being hurt by the first one wanting Daddy.
Yeah.
And that grew into, even today, Holden is turning 10 and Ronan is turning 6. If Holden comes and sits beside me.
Oh gosh, Sam.
I have a double digit child soon. This is,
I can't believe this.
But even to this day, I can sit on the couch and watch TV and Holden can come and sit beside me, and either Ro spots him and like has like a radar, spots that his older brother is about to sit with me and squeezes right through. I'm cuddling with mommy, not you. And I'm like, no, we can both cuddle. There's two sides of mommy. Rose, no, I'm here first. I'm cuddling mommy. Holden, you go play and you can come later. Or he doesn't notice that Holden comes and sits with me, and he sees that Holden sits with me. He drops what he's doing and he runs over the couch. No, I want to cuddle mommy. She's my mommy. And I'm like, okay, I think I did something wrong at some point. I am so sorry, but you're both my kids and I am your mom to both, and I love you both. So I don't know happened.
Sam, they love you dearly. You went from feeling alone to now, when you want to kind of be alone, you have these two boys that are just all about mommy. You went from one extreme to the other extreme.
You can't even pee without two of them coming in with lightsabers and they're all like, woo! And then I have one on the side of the toilet ready to go, because I'm like, yeah, I know. This is boy mom, 100%.
You got to teach very quickly, because I'm still trying to learn. Mine is still young, but oh my gosh, I have so much energy.
Yeah.
Woo, so much energy. All right, so people are probably saying, okay, she's talking about her two kids, but she mentioned that she's a mom of three. So let's kind of get into that, Sam, even though I know a little bit about that story, but I won't share it. It's your story to share.
Well, we can try and fast forward, but when we bought a house and had Ronan, we kind of just played house. That's the way I like to label how I lived my life. So me and Cody were together for almost 10 years. And in those 10 years, we went through all of these chapters, but a lot of it was very, it sounds like, oh, they must love each other. And we did. We loved each other. But I feel like I loved him as the father of my child, as opposed to being in love with him. I think there is a difference.
Yes.
But you don't, coming from someone who wants to be something that she never, like she never saw as a child, you wanted to show, almost I wanted to show up for my family. Like, well, I know how to be with one guy and have a child and get married and have a house. You guys didn't do that. So like, I'm going to do it. So I do think that I tried to stay, even though I wasn't romantically in love, I tried to stay to prove to my family that I could be better than them. And I think that that's why I went so long in a relationship that was not romantically happy. And I know that every relationship loses romance for a while. I get that. I probably didn't then, but I do understand that there are moments where maybe there's lulls. Mm-hmm. And if you love the person enough, you'll get through those moments and you'll find each other again, because in a relationship that lasts so long, you grow. And by growing means you change, and you're going to change into different people. And that doesn't mean you shouldn't be together. If you love the person enough, you accept the growth. You want your partner to grow. Mm-hmm. But I do think from the beginning, there was not a lot of compatibility. So it made it very difficult as we were going through these to ever try and find the strength to keep fighting. But I did, for the sole purpose of proving to my family I could do it. I'm not going to be some single mom like all of you guys have been. I'm not going to be an alcoholic or a drug addict. Like, I'm going to do this the right way. But it got to a point where, like, I would come home from work. He would come home from work. I would have dinner on the table. We would barely speak at the table. We would eat dinner. And then he would go play video games. And I would go upstairs and play with the kids and then go to bed. And we would go to bed at different times. There was no bond. And then I just more and more realized, like, there's got to be more.
You don't want
love.
Yeah, you don't want this for your life. Because yes, you have kids. You guys have kids together. Beautiful family. But love needs to be there. Because if you guys had stayed together for 20 years and went through this for 20 years, what are you getting from somebody you're supposed to be growing with together? And when the kids are gone, what do you have?
That's exactly the point, is when the kids are gone, what,
Yeah.
you know, eventually these beautiful children are going to grow up and they're going to start their own families. And you, not to say it like this, but say it like this, is then you're stuck with that person for the rest of your life. The kids are gone and this is your person. And if that's not the person that you want to wake up to every day, then, you know, you've wasted a lifetime pretending that this is the right thing to do and everything else.
And the thing people need to understand is, when it comes to relationships and children, like, you need to have a good relationship with the person that you're with, because your children are very smart. They know when mommy and daddy loves each other. They know when mommy and daddy hates each other. Like, they see a lot more than we think. As much as we try and pretend like everything is okay, they see a lot more. What, with me even saying that, like, Adrian and I talk about this all the time. I think it's very healthy for your children to see you upset, and very healthy for you, your children to see that you're happy, because then they have a realistic expectation when they get into relationships themselves to say, you know what, I know that there's going to be moments that are, you know, happy go lucky, and there's going to be moments that are not so good, but it's watching mommy and daddy go through it and come out the other end, because you don't want to put a false idea in their head. However, you also don't want them to see, if this is what love is like and my parents are always fighting and they have no love for each other, I don't see them hug, I don't see them kiss, I don't see them laugh with each other. If this is what a relationship is like, I don't want that. So it's balancing to see, okay, there's good and there's bad. There's not just bad and there's not just good. Because when you think there's just good, you're going to have an expectation that if your relationship is not good and you guys are arguing, it's not a real relationship. So it's finding the balance.
There's definitely something I learned in child development in college, and it's the first 3 years of a child's life, they have the most synapses in their brain they could possibly have. They are working very hard to make connections, to know how to make of life. And so those first 3 years are crucial. Those are the moments that everything you do, those kids are observing, taking in, processing, and developing their version of life, their morals, their values. And I'm now teaching these children that love is not even, there was no lovey-dovey, there's no touchy. I think that parents should kiss their each other in front of the kids. They should show their children, this is love, guys. Like, this is how you love. Yes, there's going to be ups and downs. Yes, we're going to fight and we're going to make up. And here's how we made up. I think it's beautiful to be able to have my kids see me go in an argument and not hide away from it. Let the kids observe and listen if it's, you know, obviously developmentally appropriate, depending on what the situation is, and be able to make up in front of them so they can be like, oh, okay. So, like, it's okay to get in that fight, and this is how they worked it out. And now they're okay. Like, that's okay. There was a saying that someone said in a podcast that I listened to, and it was a woman in an unhappy marriage for years. And the main reason is that she had a daughter and she wanted to stay for her daughter. But then someone, her therapist, I think, said, because she said, well, I don't want to separate and put my daughter through this. Like, I need to stay for my daughter. And then the therapist said, but would you want this for your daughter?
Yes.
Like, would you want this relationship for her? Because what you're doing now is guiding her into the same morals and values of what she thinks love is and what a relationship looks like. You were teaching her that this is okay, and it's not okay. And it is okay to be separated. You don't have to hate each other. There doesn't need to be so much hatred and negativity. And that was something that me and Cody, I will pride ourselves on to the day we die, is we did make a decision in 2019. You know what? This is more of a friendship than it is a relationship, and this isn't fair. And he did say he's old school. He wants to stay. He wants to work through it. Let's go to counseling. And we tried. I didn't even want to go, but we tried. We went to a counseling session, and right away, the man looked at me and said, I'm so sorry. And he looked at Cody and said, I think that she's tapped out. She's done. And the more we sit here and we try and force this, we are going to make you both resent each other, because you're now making her feel she has to stay because you're wanting to stay because you have kids and a house and you need to try and make it work. And now you're making her feel like she's forcefully coming here. She's forcefully making it work. And then in the end, he says, I've seen it happen so many times. You end up resenting each other and it becomes a very negative separation. And so he's like, I believe, and it's, you know, he's like, this is all on you, but I'm just saying my outside perspective of doing this for years. I do believe she's checked out. I think that if this could be as amicable as possible, then maybe we stop here. Like, let's not push it.
And you can't somebody to love somebody. You cannot force somebody to love somebody, right? If it's not there, it's not there.
And I tried. I did. But then I was very quickly like, no, I can't do it. Like, I don't know what love is, but I know it's not this. Because I'm not excited to see him when he comes home from work. I'm not excited to hold his hand or kiss him or do anything. Like, it was just, I knew something was off and I didn't want to hurt him. That's the worst part. I didn't hate him.
Yeah.
I just didn't love, I wasn't in love with him. And that was the hardest part, is breaking someone's heart that you still genuinely care about and you love as the father of your children, but you just, you're not in love. And how do you say something? I broke my heart trying to express this, but I knew that I needed to be honest with myself, honest with him, and show the children that sometimes things don't work out, but that's okay. And we can get through this as a family. Whether we're together or not, we're still a family.
Yes. You know?
Yeah. And we're still co-parenting. So even with separating, there are things that come up with the kids, and him and I work together. We get in group conversations over the phone and we talk to the kids as a whole and we teach them, mommy and daddy aren't together anymore, but we love you and we want the best for you. So let's work through this anger. Because we've had situations with Ronan who has very hard time with self-regulation, and we still are a united front. And I think there is nothing more than teaching the children a life skill, which is that it's okay if something doesn't work out with somebody, whether it's a friendship or a relationship. It's okay. We can get through this together, and we don't need to be so negative. I mean, I don't need to take him for all his money and take the kids and have more custody over them. He is an amazing father. I am the most amazing I can be as a mother. I don't know what amazing
you are amazing.
but we do our best, and that to me is what matters. Like, I believe that you can get very, very quickly hateful and spiteful and do things to hurt the other partner, but who does it hurt in the end? The children are hurt.
Yeah.
Why is mommy and daddy hate each other? Why don't we get to see mommy that much? Or why don't we get to see daddy that much? Why is it that when we see daddy, he's always sad? Like, we don't want that for each other. We want to be happy and we want our children to be happy, and we both deserve love. And that's what I told him. I said, you might hate me for a little while, but one day you're going to meet someone who makes you feel so in love and so happy. You're going to realize why we did this. And I know that you're going to hate me. And I'm so sorry for doing this right now, but I know that we both deserve more than this.
And but you know, the thing is, Sam, is that you were, even though it may have taken 10 years, you were able to take a step back and say, as much as I wanted a family, as much as I wanted to feel love, as much as I wanted all of this, I had to recognize that this isn't for me, that I'm feeling forced into a relationship that I really don't want to be in. And I don't want to hurt this person. And you were so strongly to wait that long, that many years, because of your fear of hurting this person, because of what you went through. Going back to, again, the childhood trauma, you were hurt for many years, not just from like being left alone, but trauma that you've been through. You were hurt. So you know what it feels like to hurt. And even though it may not be to this extent, you still have that fear of affecting somebody else to feel anywhere close to what you experienced. And even your children saying, okay, you know, it's not just me and their father that's separating and I could possibly be hurting him, but now how am I hurting the children by making this decision? It's like, it's in here. But at the end of the day, you gotta put yourself first. As you have children, yes, but putting yourself first and making sure that you're okay allows them to see a different mommy and that they are okay. Because if you're not okay, they're not going to be okay. You're not going to be able to care for them the way that you want to or feel that you can, because you're dealing with so many other things inside here. You know, like when you're when you go through emotional, something emotional happens at work or something, and then you come home and you're like, I'm trying not to take this out on my spouse or whomever's around, but somehow it happens.
Yep.
It's the same thing. Like, you don't want to be in a relationship where you're hurting and you're angry. You don't want to be here. And your kids say something to you, and because you're already so angry, you may take it out on them. Be in a better space so you can take care of them better, right?
That's the biggest thing that I've had to learn, is that I keep pouring into other people's cups, but nobody's pouring back into mine. And now I feel empty. I feel alone. I feel helpless. I feel like I don't have patience for people. And then I become this bitter person who doesn't even know who she is anymore. And I realize that I have to take care of me in order to take care of all these people. And that means pouring back in my cup, whether it is from someone pouring into me and making me feel better. I knew that eventually that won't be enough. I do have to pour into my own cup. I have to figure out how I could be happy with myself and do the things that make me feel good about myself so that I can have the strength. Because for a long time, I did feel, with my childhood trauma and with my stuff, well, I need to be someone that can fix my problems, that can help me feel better and make me feel better. And then I kept, obviously, nobody, especially people who haven't gone through this, they don't know how to make me feel better. And it's not their job. It's not your job to fix me. It's not your job to give me what I didn't have before. Like, it's my job to figure out me and take care of me and fill back my cup, to a point where at least it won't ever be empty. Maybe no one's pouring in my cup and I do deserve that. But if I can at least take care of myself, then at least there's enough for me to still do enough for my kids, at least. Like, my kids deserve my patience, my love, my happiness, but I can't do any of that if I'm not happy with myself.
Exactly.
And so that's why I did. I took the risk. I was honest, and we separated, and it was very difficult, but we did it the best way we can. I do feel personally that we are closer now today than we ever were in a relationship. And so that speaks volumes for me. And I am now, as we blend into this conversation, and I am in a blended family with someone new. And no, like, not to be mean, I hope that Cody feels the same way I do about Dylan, as like, I hope one day he can feel that, because this is what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
I knew that there was more. I knew that there is a way that even when shit is so bad, excuse my language, I don't know if we're less for it, even when things are so bad, that at the end of the day, you love this person so much, you're going to find a way, you're going to find a route that's going to take you to the end together, no matter how hard it is. And that's where I found that person. I found the person that I'm willing to shed tears and heartache and anger and short patience and all the things. But at the end of the day, we love each other so much. We are going to make it work. And we're going to figure out what we can do to be better versions of ourselves so that we can live together. And when these kids are gone, we are going to be, you know, living the life, just, you know, you and me. And I remember not feeling that excitement in my previous relationship. So that's how I knew there was something missing. And different. I didn't know what it was going to feel like. I just knew that I needed something more. And
a bonus, so better that, like, I think it's so amazing. I remember when I first met Dylan's son, I was like, Sam, you sure this is not your child? You sure? Like, you guys, you would have never known that it was a blended family. You guys mesh very well. And it's so amazing to just see how his son connects with you. Like, what was it? Was it my baby shower? Something that I had at the house. And you guys came over and I'm like, oh, Sam, we have lots of food. Come, like, come.
Oh, and, yeah, it's me and Koopy, yeah.
Yeah. And when he came in and just ran around the house and holding on to you, I was like, oh, my heart.
I felt special too, because we were in a home where he didn't know them as much, but he knew me well. So he finally connected and, like, attached himself like a leech to me. And I felt so special. I'm like, oh my gosh, he feels comfortable with me. Like, I will never take the place of his mother. She's a wonderful mom and she's doing her thing. I don't want to ever take that position.
Yes.
But I do think it's important that when he is with me and he is with his father and he is with the boys, that he feels a part of the family in an equal place, that you are a child, you are a son to me, and I will treat you like you are my own, and I will love you that you are my own. And I do truly feel like he is a son to me.
And he is.
Yeah, there's always
Bonus, your bonus son. Your bonus son. Yes, yes, he has his biological mom, but and even if parents like have, you know, different relationships, whatever, you have two. You have your biological mom that you have your relationship with, but when he comes to the house, it's you're the mom of the house. Like, you love him and you care for him like he is your own. And that's the best part about having a blended family, because there's so many difficulties when it comes to having blended families where, you know, the kids don't get along, or they feel that there's favoritism with, you know, your own kids. There's so many things that happen. But when you have that bonus child that can talk to you and love on you and hug you and kiss you and just have that emotional attachment, oh, not that I have any bonus kids, you know, but I can just imagine knowing that somebody who may not be biologically yours, but you feel like they are, that's amazing. That's amazing. Right?
And I've learned nothing more than DNA does not make a family.
No. Oh,
not
no.
At all.
No, guys, I just said that Sam is family. Do you see my skin color? Do you see her skin color? We are family.
Okay? We are family. Yes, I am an auntie to that cutie little boy, and I cannot wait to squish his cheeks when all of this crazy COVID stuff ends.
I know, right? Oh man,
but it is, and I know that I feel like he is mine, because when we have a moment where, like, you know, and I mean this, no offense to Dylan, but he'll like wake up and he'll come to me first, and I'm like, he came to me first. He feels more comfortable with me, so it makes me just feel so welcome, because that's all I want. I want him to know that I love him the same. I listened to a podcast, Sibling Rivalry, with Kate Hudson and her brother, mm-hmm. Oliver Hudson, and they interview siblings, and a lot of them blended families, and some of the siblings talking about how they didn't feel welcome, that they knew that, you know, their step parent liked them, but like they never really felt like fully welcome, and that they didn't feel as loved as the other children. So I don't know how many times we have these like lovey communicating like conversations in the car, but it's always when we're driving and the three boys are sitting in the back, or I guess now my oldest is in the front because he's getting way too old, and we'll have these conversations and I'll say, hey Koopy. He's like, yeah. I'm like, I love you. He's like, oh, I love you too, Sam. I'm like, okay. And then I'll be like, hey, Ronan, I love you. And we'll do that. And then I'll turn around and be like, just so you guys know, I love you all the same. And you're all my boys. And I just want to make you remember, like, I just want to send you a reminder that, you know, I love you so much. And even though I'm not your mommy, Goopy, I'm Sam, and I'm just like a mommy to you, and I love you so much. And like, I overcompensate because I have that bad habit of overcompensating, but I keep trying to remind him, like, hey, I love you. And he now does it to me in the car out of nowhere. He'll just be like, Sam. And I'm like, yes. He's like, I love you. And I'm like, and then I want to cry because I'm like, okay, I had to have done something right, because it's so hard. Yeah. You just, I don't know what's going through their mind, and they're so little, and I just want him to feel welcome, because I think it's intimidating for Cooper, because he's coming into a family where there's already two boys, right? Yeah. And it's a new home for him, and I just never wanted him to feel intimidated, and so I just constantly remind him, like, hey, I love you, and I care about you, and you're just, you're one of my boys, just like Ronan and Holden. And so I'm hoping that pays off one day, because I never want any of them to feel where one is more important than the other. It's just, it's definitely with a blended family, you have to make sure that the children feel equally loved, because that can turn into some pretty deep underlining issues as they get older, not feeling good enough. And I don't ever want all three of them, I never want them to experience not feeling good enough, because I still to this day struggle feeling not good enough for people, not feeling good enough for myself. And I know that that's things I'm dealing with and I'm working on. But yeah, I never want anyone to feel that way.
Like, you know what it feels like. And because you know what it feels like, you don't want other people to feel it. And that's good. That's good and bad. Like we mentioned earlier, good in terms of, you know, they don't feel a lack of, but can be bad when you try and overcompensate. So it's like balancing the both. But we, Adrian on here, as he's continuing to talk and give kudos to Dylan, we can talk from the outside looking in. You and Dylan are doing an amazing job. Those kids love you, And every day, as you know, you got a 10-year-old, I got a 1-year-old. But every day,
I feel old now. 10-year-old.
Every day, motherhood, it's trial and error. We've all learned that trial and error. We'll never know what's actually happening in their head. We'll never know what's happening in our spouse's, our partner's head. For whatever reason, I wish we could to read them, but we'll never know. All we can do is do and ask questions and let them be open and honest with us, right? I think that's also a big thing with whether you're a blended family or not a blended family, to be able to have open conversations with your children so they can say, I feel uncomfortable, mommy, or I feel uncomfortable, Sam, or, you know, that hurt my feelings. Why did it hurt your feelings, right? Allowing them to feel, or, you know, I don't feel, you weren't able to express that, you know, you feel rejected. You, as you said, like your mom didn't believe half of the stuff you were saying. So even just applying that to say, I don't want them to feel like I don't listen or I don't believe them. Let them be able to have that open conversation with me. Yeah, see, Aina said, you two are phenomenal parents.
Yeah. And thank you, Robin, too. That's very sweet of you.
First time I've seen you. You're amazing. Yes, see?
Robin is a blended family, and she's also a wonderful mom. And she knows. She's got more kids than me. So she knows it can be busy. And on that note, too, blending a family and having 3 boys, 3, 5, and 9, there was obviously definite clashes, behavioral issues, and being a little bit of a ECE background, I decided, hey, let's do a point system. So we have a big calendar, which we just moved, so it's not up yet. Oh, wait, yeah, it's in the boys' room. We put it up recently. They're not here until tomorrow, so that's why I forgot. But anyways, there's a point system. And so Holden being 10, he doesn't have behavioral issues. He's actually the golden child, we call him. He's just super easy. I said, okay, fine. You don't have behavioral issues, so we're going to do a point system for you. So every time you do something, maybe you load the dishwasher or you make sure you make your bed every day or you put your clothes away or you help me with laundry. Like when you're doing things around the home, I will give you points. And at the end of your 20 points, you get $5. Mm-hmm. And you can earn many points in a day. It just depends how much you do. So that's why after 20 points, we only give $5 because we're like, well, he's going to be richer than me if I give him any more. So we have to watch. So then for the other two being 3 and 5, learning to have empathy for each other, learning to help each other when one is struggling with something. They're fighting over a toy and now before they were like angry and screaming and fighting and throwing things. And now Ronan will be like, and I know at first it seems a little strange. He'll be like, oh, you know what? Cooper, you can have this toy. I want to share with you. And then he does go to me instantly and be like, mommy, do I get a point now? Because I shared with Cooper.
Yeah.
Yes, that is the beginning. And I did this with children in my care when I was in ECE. Initially, it starts that way. But then you ease off on the points and you say, oh, well, that was very nice of you. Like, maybe we do 1 point at the end of the day if you can do that throughout the whole day. So that you start to give less points, but push more of those things so that they're not like only doing it for points. And then eventually the whole goal is that it becomes a habit to just be kind and not want the points in the end. So it is a process. In the beginning, it does look like you're only doing it for the points, but that unfortunately, that is what you have to do.
They're small. They're learning.
Yeah. And there's bad habits right now. Ronan was the youngest child. He got everything. Mm-hmm. I realized that as a mom, I was kind of like, oh, well, you know, like Ronan, he's going to scream and get angry. Like, just give it to him, Holden. Who cares? We'll get you something else. That was not a good idea because now he's a little bit like, well, I get whatever I want. And then now he's the middle child. Mm-hmm. Going from the youngest to the middle is a whole transition. So it's teaching him the habit of not every time, but like, hey, you've got two of the same things. Maybe you can give one to Cooper and then you guys can play together. It's kind of boring if you had both and you're playing all alone. There is a bit of a process. It's not just like, oh, yes, you shared, you get a point. There is more conversation, but the point system really works. So at night, Dylan will be tucking the boys in and he has the chart in the bedroom. It's like, hey, boys, like, Ronan, I noticed today that when you went over to the toy room, you saw that Cooper was struggling with building the castle and you went over and helped him. That was really nice of you. I'm going to give you a point today for that. And then Ron's like, ooh, that's exciting. And so he starts to do those things on purpose and then stops asking, oh, can I have a point now because I did it? And he just realizes that it's a nice thing to do, but Dylan will still give the points at the end of the night. And it's just, it's just developing good habits of caring for others. And, you know, I don't expect him to share everything every time. That's not how it is. But just, it is hard from going to the youngest and you only having an older brother to having a little brother who's like following you around and wants all the toys you want. And so there was a transition there, but it was, it works really well doing the point system. So any parents who are struggling with something like that, even with their own kids that aren't blended, I find the point system on a chart is very good because as soon as they get to 20 points, I actually forgot to say this. As soon as they get to 20 points, they get to go to the dollar store and pick out a snack or a toy.
Nice.
So, and then it restarts after 20 and you just keep going.
And well, that's good. And one thing that I want, I love that. But one thing that you also mentioned that I think is so, hopefully you guys didn't miss it. She said that Dylan tucks the boys in. Remember, this is a blended family. And it's, even though they're a blended family, there is no, okay, you know, Sam's going to tuck in her two boys or she's only going to give attention to her two boys and then Dylan's going to give attention to his. No, it's a right across the board. They're all your kids. All three are yours. All three are his. He has the responsibility of, I hate the word responsibility, but he takes the task of, you know, making sure the boys are okay before going to bed and then giving that point system, you know, rewarding them because he noticed something that they did. And it wasn't just his biological son that he's paying attention to. It's all of them. Like, I love that. I love that. And it's so important for parents to understand that if you're getting into a relationship with somebody who has children, understand it's not just the person. You are taking everything that they come with. You are taking them and their children. It's not just that.
The good and the bad, too, of the children.
The good and the bad. If the person, listen, even if you want to talk about children, you want to talk about debt, for example. If you're taking on that person, you marry somebody with debt, you're taking on that debt, too. It's
the same baggage. Thing. It's all yours.
All of it.
You threw it all in one room, and now you got to freaking fold it and organize it.
Exactly.
I thought it was very sweet. Yes, he would always say goodnight, tuck them in, I love you. He would always shoot out, I love you, like after a couple of months of being comfortable.
Yeah.
And at first, like Ronan, he's a hard boy. He wouldn't say anything. Goodnight. And then over time, it was, love you. And he would like say it under his breath. And now he's hugging, he's kissing. And even the day, well, he'll say, I love you too. And Dylan's heart melts. And he's like, oh my gosh, I love me. And now sometimes Ronan will say before Dylan even says it. And then Dylan, his reaction isn't just like, oh, I love you too, buddy. Like he gets out of the room and Sam, did you hear that? He said, I love you first. I didn't even have to say it. And he gets so excited. And I'm like, that is like, to me, that wins my heart. Cause I'm like, all I ever want is for my boys to feel comfortable enough to love him. And I also want him to be excited and want them to be considered a son to him too. Like, it's a big deal to me to just see it all. And then that's the same with Koopy, right? Like, I'm always like, Koopy, I love you. And like, hey, come cuddle me. And like, I probably chase him around a little bit too much to make him love me, but I just want him to love me. He's young, right? Like, it's sometimes, I don't know what's harder. If they're younger in a separation, if they're older. I mean, Holden's the oldest and he's very accepting, but he was emotional. Yeah. He's sensitive. He wears his heart on his sleeve like his mother. And he cried during the separation. It was very hard on him. And for about 2 years, it was, why can't you just get back together, daddy? And that was really a difficult conversation because I'm like, because mommy and daddy like each other and they love each other as family, but we're not in love with each other and there's a difference. And I hope that one day when you're older, mommy can
understand,
you know, the one day you'll understand it and we can have this conversation again. I'm like, I know it's so hard to understand, but I promise you, like, the day it happens to you, I'll be able to explain it more for you. And in the meantime, you just comfort them.
So they're still young. I'm sure they have a glimpse or a better understanding now because they see the difference between you and Dylan and how you and their dad lived and were. Mind you, it's like still a lot. What are we in 2020? Two years ago? 3 years ago? Whatever, however long it's been. But I'm sure that even though they're young, they can still sense the difference. And even knowing that you have a relationship with their father, you talk to their father, you guys are very cordial, you guys love each other as family, but then you still have your romantic relationship with Dylan. So they have an idea that when they grow older and, you know, they get into a relationship to say, you know what, I can recognize this. My parents weren't together, but they had a good relationship. You and I are not, no, we're not compatible. I want to find what my mom and Dylan have. That's what I want. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's good.
And there's so many different versions. I feel like there's the so old many. School love where they stayed together because they were together and they had kids. But then there's also this love, and maybe you can call it modern love. I don't know how to explain it, but there is a love that even after, I mean, we had one separation between the relationship, but if you were to take away the 3 months break that we took, which we could dive into that another time, but it was mostly the age gap. There is a big age gap between me and Dylan, but we got back together and we've been together for a year. But if you take away the 3 months we were separated, it's been almost 2 years. Yeah. And even after 2 years, I still want to hold his hand. I still want to kiss him randomly all the time. I still want to cuddle him on the couch, like all the time. And the car, I still want to hold his hand. And the kids watch it and they smile and they love to see that, like, we're still kissing, we're still happy. Even if we have an argument, somehow at the end of the day, we're still loving each other and cuddling each other and being able to foster that with them to see mm-hmm. that when they get older, they can have that love too. Not everybody has it, and that's okay. Some people aren't affectionate but love their partner. But they yes. are, you know, there's five love languages and everyone exactly. shows it differently.
Yeah.
So you've got to find your person who is compatible with you and that you are compatible with them. And I finally found that person. And so it's just super exciting. I knew that there was more to a relationship than what I had before. And I'm just glad that I can show that to the children now, because we all deserve to feel loved and to love someone unconditionally.
And the one thing, because I know we're going to close soon, but the one thing that Sam mentioned was the whole love languages. And I think that's very important, because one thing, I'm putting a plug here, but one thing that Adrian and I do every year, at the beginning of every year, is we set goals and we do the love languages quiz or test, whatever you want to call it, because we know what we change. We know as human beings, we're not the same people we were 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, which also means that our love languages do change. Like, so every year, Adrian and I look at it to say, okay, what's our love language? What has happened in the last year? Like, those who know, the issues that we had with Aiden last year. And I feel like some of the things that were on our love language quiz that came like at the bottom 5 years ago is way at the top now. And the impact is because of what we've been through and we've had to go through to say, okay, how can we continue to love each other after having kids, right? After health issues. And I know we didn't even get a chance to talk about your son and his health. We have to
do this all day.
I know. There's more like stuff to come. Part 8,
and people are gonna be like, "Oh my God, these two again."
No, but I have to get into that story, because, like, you understood what I was going through because you went through something similar. But let's not even give them any teasers. Let's just leave it there. Let's just leave it there, and we're gonna talk about it again.
Tune in again to listen to the next.
I know. But I think that's so good, because not just love language with your partner, but with your children, because you need to understand how your children need to be loved and want to be loved. Because you saying I love you to one person doesn't mean that I love you to another person is going to mean anything to them. Like, mommy, can you show me you love me? Mommy, I want this. This person likes gifts. This person likes to hear stuff, you know. This person wants your time, your quality time with you. It's all different. And then that's managing blended family and multiple kids. It can be a stressor on us as parents too, because we're like, what do we do?
Everybody. And with work and chaos and new routines and everything, I will say one thing that you got to do, and me and Dylan have never stopped doing. There's been a few that we had to put off because maybe a child was sick or we moved. Is we have a bi-weekly Monday night where we don't have the kids because they're with their other parent. Mm-hmm. And we do date nights twice a month minimum. We do our date nights bi-weekly Monday. We can go out and not even spend money. We can go and, you know, go sit by the water and have an ice cream or have a tea or whatever. But no matter what, we dedicate one evening biweekly to each other to maybe suggest, hey, you know what? I noticed that you were doing these things and I really loved how you did this. And hey, like, this is a safe space for us to also say the things that maybe upset us. So it's, hey, yeah, like, you know, I noticed that this happened. That really upset me. Do you think we could work through that? And that communication alone was really nice. And it's actually nice to do it in a public setting where you almost forcefully can't get angry at each other.
Yeah.
And they say it takes the negativity in the relationship outside of the home. So that, yeah, when you come home, it feels like a safe space to just be happy, and that the arguments and the negativity or whatever disagreement you have is outside of the home, and then you come into your home to feel safe and loved again. It doesn't always work. Obviously, sometimes you have an argument in your house, but we try our best to keep it outside of the home, and we go out and we bond and we just have fun also. We just take the night away, because that's the wonderful thing about some blended families when they have other parents that they go to. You try to plan it out. Yeah.
Because you need it for long. And I like that, because you guys need your time as a couple. And if one of the children are with their other parent and you have the other child with you, it's like you never get your alone time to each other.
And it's important. Okay. I never thought it was important. I was all about the kids and I need to be there for the kids. But no, I learned the second time around, you cannot be good family as a whole if you are not a strong, united front with your partner, the person who's supposed to be your team member.
Yeah.
And how are we, you know, like, I can't thoroughly be happy and be the perfect mom for these kids if I don't have the other person beside me working as a team. And, you know, I learned that the hard way, that we were so separated that, yeah, there was a lot of negativity. I was miserable all the time, which means I was parenting the kids in a miserable way. And I was just like, yeah, whatever, do whatever you want. And like, I just was short tempered and then angry. But when you and your partner are strong, I just feel like you're a different parent altogether. Yeah. You're more positive, you're happy. And so that's one thing I will say, is just take time for your relationship, because if you guys aren't doing well, then the whole family's not doing well.
Yeah.
Kind of a dominoes effect.
You guys are the foundation, right?
You set the tone of the environment, right? If me and Dylan are happy, then the kids are going to be happy, because we're all woohoo and, you know, more positive environment.
No, it's true. It's true, guys. But I know I've kept you on long, and I've kept every one of you people on here long too. But
sorry.
And I think maybe it's July or August. I haven't confirmed with Sammy, and I have to confirm. But there will definitely be a part two of this conversation, because we really want to dig deep into just the childhood trauma. I know we kind of briefly talked about it, and I mean briefly, guys. There's lots more to kind of dig into about her childhood trauma, to understand like why she is the way that she is now, how that has impacted her change in the way that she mothers, and then the impact that it had again. We were not talking about it, because if we talk about it, we're not coming off of here, with her son and some health issues that came up and all of that lovely stuff. But thank you, Sam, for giving me what is this, an hour and 15 minutes, almost 15 minutes of your night, even though you left me.
Hey, I heard that you guys are going to leave too.
We'll see. We have no idea. This market is just... We'll see.
Rob would be sad if they end up moving next door. And then right? You move out of that house. That would be funny if you're talk them into moving in there, and then you guys like, oh, by the way, we're leaving here. Bye.
Yeah, I don't. We thought about it, but we're not sure. I know. Everyone's
on the fence with everything. Even the landlord at the home beside you guys, he was like, I don't know if I'm going to sell. I don't know if I'm going to rent. And it's no one knows what to do in this economy.
Oh my God. And those Americans that may be watching or will watch this after, it's rough here in Canada. You can make money off of investment properties, but you can't afford to buy anything in this market. Yeah. Unless you have like $500,000 to put down, and that's Canadian, $500,000 to put down on a house, to have a decent type of mortgage to pay monthly, there's no buying.
If I'm renting for $2,500 a month plus utilities, and no assets.
Anyway.
Give away money.
Right?
Yeah.
Anyways, girl, thank you so much. Kiss those babies for me. Hi, Dylan, if you can hear me. Hi. And we need to come visit you guys soon. See that lovely, lovely house that you guys are in right now. But thank you for taking the time to be with me.
Thank you for having me.
Bye, honey.
See ya.